Welcome to Straight Outta Hull, the podcast about the Hull music scene of the 1980s and 1990s. Everything but the girl arrived before the House Martins. Paul used to say that the House Martins were the fourth best band in Hull, and Everything But the Girl were, by implication, the very best. Named after a slogan used by a long-vanished furniture shop on Beverley Road, Ben and Tracy arrived in Hull in 1981 to go to the famous university, home of a librarian called Philip Larkin. Curiously enough, Beverley Road was also home to the Mainbrace pub, which later became the de facto HQ office of the House Martins. Both Ben and Tracy had released solo albums in 1982, before Paul even arrived in Hull. They merged later to form their duo on Cherry Red Records. Often compared to Sade, they peddled a type of music sometimes called sophistipop, although not by anyone in Yorkshire. This kind of thing appealed to the dance floor addicts, which eventually became the rave culture in the 1990s. Everything But the Girl fitted into that synth groove along with Norman Cook as Beats International and New Order. This is a different groove altogether from the choir boy gospel barbershop quartet of the House Martins. The duo's first single was a cover of Cole Porter's Night and Day. Conveniently for us, this was also night and day from the kind of music Everything But the Girl would produce in the 1990s, such as the massively successful platinum single Missing. But do the deserts really miss the rain? What on earth did Tracy mean? Everything But the Girl was signed to Cherry Red Records, who are still going strong today, unlike the House Martins label Go Discs. Go Discs merged into Polygram and no longer releases new music except for being a logo on Beautiful South album covers. Strangely enough, the Go catalogue now belongs to Virgin EMI, owned by Universal, which releases albums by Paul and Jackie Abbott. York's Red Rhino were also influential. Why did Hull never evolve its own label like Manchester's Factory Records? There is one vital clue. Hull didn't have Anthony H. Wilson, or anyone like him. But then, no other city had anyone like him either. The Beautiful South started to take shape from the ruins of the House Martins throughout 1988. However, if Paul Heaton was looking for a new direction, the new band started to look a little too like the old one. Dave Hemingway was not going anywhere, and their driver, Sean, fancied a crack at the big time. Another Dave, Dave Rothery, a Grafton Street neighbour of Paul's, had played with Hemingway before, and had been instrumental in getting Hemingway a job with the House Martins. All they needed now was a new drummer, as Hemingway had set his sights on grander things, like singing. Step forwards, yet another Dave. Dave Stead, to complete the original five guys that became the Beautiful South after a torturous project to give themselves a new name. This original incarnation of the Beautiful South had a similar sound and spirit to the House Martins, and they failed to register with our small group of 10-year-old music critics. If you didn't like the House Martins, you wouldn't like this incarnation of the Beautiful South either, and you probably chose Everything But the Girl. The stroke of genius came later, and almost completely by accident. As it had in the 1960s for another legendary British band, a blues outfit sometimes known as Fleetwood Mac, the addition of a female singer to the Beautiful South propelled them into another arena completely. Mike Pattenden's official history suggests that a female vocalist was part of the plan from day one. It was only lack of a suitable candidate that delayed matters. This may be true, but if so, why did the girl they eventually recruit miss the entire first shambolic tour? And why can't she be heard on the first album? Brianna Corrigan had travelled from Northern Ireland to attend her Northern University, a long drive north from Hull in Newcastle. As the singer of the long-forgotten Ant Hill Runaways, she came to the attention of Go Discs, the record company of the House Martins and the Beautiful South. Auditions were arranged, something indefinable clicked, and Brianna became the sixth member, and for our school gang in Anlaby, the most important member of the Beautiful South. The songwriters of the South, Paul Heaton and Dave Rothery, could finally give voice to the other half of their dramatised domestic working class arguments. By the time the band had polished off their first album, which ended up being called Welcome to the Beautiful South, and started work on Choke, the scene had been set for national domination for the next 15 or more years. Other Hull bands were around in the late 1970s and early 80s, of course. If Paul Heaton could pretend the House Martins were only the fourth best band in Hull, with Everything But the Girl first, there must have been at least two others. Although forgotten from today's vantage point, the Gargoyles and the Red Guitars were both flying high in the 1980s. Hugh Whittaker, the first drummer in the House Martins, was poached from the Gargoyles, as was another early Doors House Martin, Ted Key. Bands such as the Paddingtons and Kingmaker did not exist at this time, although perhaps these other schoolboys across town would have been avid followers of both the House Martins and the Beautiful South, in the way that Scarlet were, although they weren't boys. The Red Guitars burned brightly, but burned out even before the House Martins, and finally chucked it in 1986. The Gargoyles have slipped so far from consciousness that a 2015 Hull Daily Mail article titled "The 10 Best Bands to Come Out of Hull" omitted them entirely. Still, the same narrow-minded article also erased Scarlet from history, a mistake that our show is happy to rectify. Scarlet hit the big time just as we were packing our bags for university. One or two of us bravely ventured south, but the rest only made it across the Pennines. Either way, having been to the same school as the ladies from Scarlet was not a bad story to have in the pocket. Even better, we knew Cheryl's dad quite well. He was Dennis, our man from the Prue. This is the point in our story when the 1980s Hull scene began by Everything But the Girl and extended by the House Martins and the Beautiful South appeared to have permanent momentum. Joe Yule and Cheryl Parker knew Paul Heaton, and he had mentored them for a while. A phone call here, some encouragement there, and Scarlet were on top of the pops with Independent Love Song. A movie tie-in must have helped, and for a very brief moment, it looked like Scarlet would be around for a long time. These days, Joe runs the charity Missing People, and Cheryl continues behind the scenes in the music business. Although we can't tell you why Scarlet didn't last, their impact on students of the mid-1990s was large. It was harder then, before Napster and the music streamers and Instagram, to be famous without making money. But Scarlet pulled it off. They were huge for 5 minutes, and Independent Love Song has over 3 million plays on Spotify alone. In September 2020, the Hull Daily Mail interviewed Joanne Yule about her time in Scarlet and her work with Missing People. That was the charity which entered a choir in Britain's Got Talent in 2017, helped along by Joe, who played piano for them at a concert at St Martin's in the Fields in Trafalgar Square. As for Larkin, Joe's favourite route into Hull is by train. The tracks run close to the River Humber and pass beneath the eye-popping Humber Bridge. Although Joe is in contact with Cheryl, they are no longer close friends. Perhaps a lesson for all of us in normal office jobs is don't work with your mates. If the work goes south, you'll lose your mates as well as a job. But in the music business, you must work with your mates because they're the only ones who will join your band. Unless you've already made it, in which case you won't have any mates left. What a small group of girls from Wolfreton School achieved in the 1990s deserves another mention. Joe and Cheryl, plus their friend, the actor Deborah Stevenson, showed yet again that an ordinary northern childhood in an ordinary school cannot hide talent. What happens after that is as much about luck as anything else. It was Choke that really launched the Beautiful South. After its first single, A Little Time, became their only UK number one, the album itself shot up to number two. Brianna Corrigan's Stardust had done something new for the South. Easy with hindsight, but the only question fans were asking was, where on earth have you been hiding the pretty girl with the angel voice? Let Love Speak Up Itself dive-bombed at the time, but has stood the test of time. Many of the South's songs were given new focus by their greatest hits collection, Carry On Up the Charts, which came a few years later. It helped to strengthen a feeling that the Beautiful South, while nobody's favourite band, were just about everyone's third or fourth choice for Desert Island Discs. Let Love Speak Up Itself is an example of a song which would outlive the fickle sycophancy of the singles charts. The overriding feeling of Choke is of wasted opportunity. A Little Time is the only genuine masterpiece, and towards the end, the album simply peters out into chaos. A 12th song was removed, then added back after release, and the lasting impression is of a band finding its feet. Were it not for the success of the House Martins and the strong backing of Go Discs, it is frightening to think that the South might have been dropped after Choke. No band today would be given such leeway. Brianna Corrigan's final album with the band was 0898 Beautiful South, an album as dated as the number in its title. For the younger crowd, 0898 used to signify a premium rate phone line, often used by people wanting to talk dirty. 0898 starts off well, with Old Red Eyes is back, which might be a reference to the band's laddie heavy drinking culture, and We Are Each Other, a belter of a song that still stands tall. But it was Bell-Bottomed Tear that was the highest charting single, dragging its feet over the line to reach only number 16. It was the song named after a large bra size, 36D, that sticks in the memory. An angry rant satirising the glamour industry, it should have been a feminist anthem. But it seemed in places as though the lyrics were blaming and harassing the models themselves, rather than the industry which exploited them. And words were had between Brianna and the band. It didn't help that she was the only girl, and some audiences at gigs, who loved the sub-hooligan boozing culture of the House Martins and the early South, focused their shouty yelling at her when 36D was played. It was time to go. A chance encounter in the Northwest helped Paul Heaton fill the vacant slot for female vocalist, and Jacqueline Abbott joined the band. As it would take them a while to fit her into the group dynamic and also write another album, Go Discs decided it was time for a greatest hits collection. Nobody in the band agreed, quite logically, as bands seemed to prefer to launch such projects once all of their hits are in the past. If they launched a compilation now, Paul argued, it would be the final nail in the coffin, and he was too young and poor to retire. To the relief of Go Discs and the amazement of the band, Carry On Up the Charts was the year's success story and became the number one album at Christmas 1994 and the second biggest album of the whole year, even though it was only released in November. Finally, the South understood their audience. They were secretly loved by everyone, It was just that nobody could think of the South when put on the spot and asked to name their top three British bands. The South were not cool, but they were popular in a kind of quiet British way. Riding high with a massively successful album, a new singer, and fresh momentum, the songwriters sat down to work on Meow, beginning a partnership between Paul and Jackie that continues into 2021. ''1980s politics. The miners were unavoidable almost anywhere in the UK in the middle 1980s. There had been trouble in the 60s and 70s too, but the 80s saw a new peak of unrest. One strange quirk in our story is that Hull had no mines, and no miners, and a true Hull band might have been excused for ignoring their concerns, which would be the only thing such a band might have in common with Margaret Thatcher, the Prime Minister who finally yanked Britain off coal for good. For the schoolchildren of Hull, perhaps including all the Dabes in the beautiful South, the miners were something that happened somewhere else, on the telly news, but not in Hull. Paul's Sheffield childhood is what brought him close, both physically and spiritually, to those mining villages which had their only form of mass employment closed overnight. Our working-class hero was perturbed, and off he went to join the miners on the picket line. Paul's rebellious seeking of anarchy is a theme that crops up here and there throughout his life. Sometimes known as the last king of pop, his acidic lyrics have a clear lineage back to Larkin's poetry. It seems obvious to this fan that, had Larkin been a singer, and younger, he could have answered Paul's ad to join a new band. Larkin had lived only a few minutes away, and they also share an acidic demolition of domestic harmony using words alone. So, we add Philip Larkin to David Whitfield on a possible roster, if there was such a thing as a House Martins fantasy band game. Before we turn away from politics for the last time, let us remember that the decline of fishing was just a precursor to the decline of the mines, which, in turn, was the precursor to the decline of heavy manufacturing, including a car industry that once led Europe, if not the world. From the viewpoint of the late 1970s onwards, there is a large swathe of northern England, Scotland, and Wales that sees nothing but eternal decline. One thing that all of Paul Heaton's music has done is to shine a light on the real lives, the small yet perfectly normal, logical lives being acted out behind the net curtains while this political turmoil was in full flow. It is no wonder that the couples in so many of these songs are constantly at each other's throats, and worse, such as in The Woman in the Wall. On which happy note, don't forget, you can hear all of the songs mentioned in our show on the Spotify playlist at outerhull.uk. If you're enjoying our show, please consider a donation to the charity Missing People at this difficult time. Details in the show notes. The next episode will be the last in season one. We look at Sade, the Humber Bridge, beer, a bit more about Larkin, and the ongoing success of the beautiful South. Straight Outta Hull is presented by Lindsay Frost. It is written and produced by Paul Detman for WTD Audio.